podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And it's been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing...
Welcome to this extra special edition of the Attacking Scrum podcast. We finally know who has made Warren Gatland's 36, or should that be 37-man squad to tour South Africa. And I don't think any of us could have predicted this. And thank God all the predictions are over. So now it's time to dissect the squad, have some reaction, and who better to do that with than the mighty Murph and Daniel Killick. How are we doing, fellas? How are you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm really good. I've got a tie on for this occasion. Such a big occasion, isn't it? The tie is on and, suited and booted.
Yeah, I'm sure it's... That was your thinking when we're doing an audio only podcast for you to dress up for it. And Murph's even rocking his Hugo Monier specs on the go. They're very trendy, Murph.
Hugo Monier specs and like a Big Lebowski kind of outfit just hanging around in my pants. I haven't partaken of any illicit substances, but I am very relaxed, in complete contrast.
Man, I love that movie. The more Lebowski references you can drop into this.
Well, that's just your opinion.
I know. Right. That sums up the whole pod, I think.
It does, though, doesn't it? Yeah. Let's see who's going to tie the Lions side together like the Big Lebowski's rug. Let's get stuck into it. A very quick recap for anyone who's been living on the moon, or Dan Killick, who has been showing people around houses all day and hasn't even had a chance to have a look at the squad. This is the 37-man squad to tour South Africa. Mako Vinopola, Xander Fagerson, Tyg Furlong, Wyn Jones, Andrew Porter, Roy Sutherland are the props. Hookers, Luke Cowan-Dickie, Jamie George, Ken Owens. Locks, Ian Henderson, Johnny Hill, Mario Toje, Alwyn Jones, Courtney Laws, and Tyke Byrne, if he counts. Back row, Jack Cohn and Tom Curry, Toby Faletau, Sam Simmons, Justin Tipperick, Hamish Watson. And in the backs, it is scrum halves of Connor Murray, Gareth Davis, Ali / Tommy Price, fly halves of Dan Bigger and Finn Russell, centres Owen Farrell, Bundy Aki, Chris Harris, Robbie Henshaw, and back threes of Elliot Daly, Josh Adams, Stuart Hogg, Lewis Rees-Sammet, Liam Williams, Duane van der Merwe, and Anthony Watson. Right, to get us underway, boys, I would like one sentence from each of you that describes your thoughts on this squad. And we're going to start with the mighty Murph.
I'm in shock. I'm in shock over Josh Navidi. Like when we selected our side, we barely touched on Jack Cohen.
I think we mentioned
Caelan Doddis more.
I think you, to be fair, you brought up Jack Conan and you said that actually he'd put a couple of good performances together. I don't think certainly none of us saw him being included in there. Let's just drill down on the Josh Navidi stuff, right? Let's tackle the elephant in the room. Obviously, we've made a massive point. I told everyone I know that he was a guaranteed test player. So it shows what I know. But we've had a couple of questions in on this as well. So let's tackle Josh Navidi first. Greg Sherrington said Josh Navidi discussed. So, I mean, let's jump straight into it. I did have this good one as well from Aidan McCarthy, who's an old family friend of ours and Big Island fan. He said, I'm convinced that Gatland has ignored Josh Navidi for the Lions specifically to mess with the attacking scrummers. Is the cycling podcast going ahead? And
yes.
The only reason I can think, Murph, is that perhaps Conan gives you more of a genuine eight as cover, possibly. I mean, obviously, I'd have taken Navidi. I still would, but I don't know. Is that possible?
Gatland was questioned in the conference after, and he specifically made reference to Josh's shoulder and the fact he's not going to be fit till June.
Right.
And I think whether that was decisive or if he already had a lean in that way anyway, I don't know, but I would have had him on one leg. But I mean, obviously, that's the one we're centering on because we're big fans of his. So there's shocks all across the squad. But that's the one I think is it the biggest shock? Kyle Sinclair's a bit of a shock as well, but
I think so. I think Sinclair is a bigger shock for, I don't know, actually. I mean, I thought Navidi was a banker. Dan, let's get your thoughts. First of all, one sentence on the overall squad.
Yeah, so I think it's a very exciting squad, and it's a squad really picked primarily on form. So how many times have we said, you know, pick on form, it's what you have to do. And there are a few players that go against that, but mainly it's a squad on form. Nobody would have really called this, would they? Which is why it's probably thrown, you know, it throws it well open for so much debate, doesn't it? And it was always probably going to be that way, but there's just so many huge calls, aren't they? That how we're going to squeeze this podcast into, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, I don't know. But as you alluded to, I came to this fairly late because I was pretty busy during the day. But I'm actually really excited about the squad. It's a cracker, isn't it? There's so much quality left behind as well. That huge calls though. So many to go through.
Let's get your thoughts on Josh Navidi though. Do you think it's a thing or is it an injury thing? What's your rationale on why he's not in there?
I do think it's an injury thing. I think they must have spoken to him and thought about the Gatland's tour, you know, mentioned about durability before, isn't he? And I think probably he must have thought that it wouldn't have been, it was just going to be too much for him too soon and too long a tour then for him to come through it, because it's going to be hugely physical, isn't it? And yeah, we've gone with, I suppose, three. It's interesting, isn't it? Three eights. I know they can play in a couple of different positions, but they're obviously really looking at that position as an absolute key one, which is quite interesting in itself, isn't it?
It's bag loads of pace in the back row. If you look at it. If you leave out people like Billy, Winopola, Josh is not slow, but you know, you wouldn't think of him as a pace guy. If you look who is there, then you've got Tiprick, Hamish Watson. I can't remember who the other open side is.
Simmons is Curry. Curry's the other open side.
Yeah, so but he plays six as well, but he's not slow. Then you've got pace at eight with Faletau, Conan, who play across the back row, and Simmons. It's just like because we were talking about whether they would cover, we were concerned about whether they would cover the kind of the 6-2 split on the bench and the size of their second rows and all the thing. Well, they caught us up by picking six second rows. That's why they've gone up to 37 in the squad, because they've squeezed an extra second row. So they've matched them for the size, but in the back row, they haven't really gone anywhere near size. They're just all pace all across the back row. So in that regard, you're right, it is exciting. But I'm still picking up Cycling Monthly tomorrow from the news agents.
And then it's really explosive, isn't it?
I think that's the thing, Dan. Is,
you know,
like,
quick hard grounds.
You've got to have, like, obviously you think of the Springboks and you think of the power that they bring. But power is one thing, but you need that dynamic, explosive power, which is what I think the likes of Simmons give you. And, you know, Toby gives you that as well, because he's a big, strong guy, but it's never like a Billy Vunipola, Scott Quinnell kind of like trundling through barreling runs. You know, it's about being quick and great footwork, and you do need that over there. If you take a slow back row, which, let's be honest, Billy is much better suited to the, you know, the harsh winters over here than he is over in South Africa. So that's, and of course he's bang out of form. So, but this is the kind of back row that I think really is, there are some great options in there, but I also think Gatland is keeping his options open with regards to a lot of those second rows play six as well. So Byrne, Itoje and Laws and Henderson have all played international rugby at six. say, I mean, Alanwyn James has, if you go back 15 years, but, you know, they, the bulk of those players have got experience at six as well. So it just gives you, it gives you a couple of options, but I think it's about getting a really speedy, quick, dynamic back row. I could see twin fetches alongside Toby and stuff like that, but some exciting options. Right, let's take another question from one of our listeners. And Dan, you've touched on some of this now. This one's coming from Morgan Ball, but I'm going to throw this one over to you. Has the squad placed too much emphasis on club form?
There's quite a bit of emphasis on club form, but I think there kind of has to be. There kind of has to be quite a good amount on, you know, on the sort of club form, because if we're looking at this particular tour, he's, you know, Gatland, the one little clip I did listen to on the Uber home, I think it was Five Live, was Gatland talking about durability of players. And I suppose with club, you've got players that are playing, you know, week in, week out, especially if you look at Exeter. He's you know, with Simmons, he's played a lot of rugby, isn't he? You know, over the last few years, and he's proved really that he can go toe to toe in a good number of games, and that's going to be really important. So I think club, depending on what club you're playing, you know, what league you're playing in, what club you're at, then he was always going to go down that route partially.
Yeah.
And I think club form is also very different, isn't it, playing club than international. And I think with the Lions, because they get more time, they get quite a bit of time with them, don't they? You can kind of make it into a bit of a club and look at combinations in a slightly different way to the international. So
yeah. I mean, you don't have as many opportunities to do that this time around. There's less midweek games and things like that. Although, to be fair, one of those midweek games is the one in between tests, which is a proper Dirt Trackers outing. But the one thing I would say to counter it, though, Dan, is I think if you look at, I mean, there are 10 Welsh players in there. Well, there's no club form from any Welsh players other than maybe Faletau and Bigger, who are playing in England, because the club form of the players playing in Wales is completely irrelevant. I think it's more about big match club form. So I think you look at Simmons, he's doing it in a side that are probably the best in England and, you know, have got some serious European pedigree. It's not like people who are, you know, were clambering to say that Danny Kerr should be in the side because he's had a handful, he's had a very, very good season at Harlequins. I think it's about form that you show under real pressure in big pressure games, and that's why I don't think it's too much on club form for me. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there, and a lot even you take someone like Finn Russell, you know, his club form at Racing 92 particularly from last season is in big high pressure games. He hasn't got much club form this season. So I think it's a real mix in there, rather than being, you know, let's just pick 37 players who are all in form for their clubs.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it leans too far towards one side, does it? It's fairly down the middle, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Jamie George, Owen Farrell, Elliot Daly, none of them are in there in club form because they're playing in the Championship, and none of them had very good Six Nations either. So I think it's a mixture of players who are proven at international and the high, you know, top end international level, because, you know, we know that Farrell, you know, like him or loathe him, he has the temperament to play. You know, he's played a load of Lions tests already and performed in them. So,
yeah,
you know, he's got that in his armoury. We know the likes of Liam Williams thrives on the big occasion. We know Dan Bigger does, even though he hasn't got a Lions test. Alanwyn Jones, Mario Toji, you know, had a massive series last time round. Jamie George is in there for that because he had an excellent test series and, you know, has proven to be a dependable player. So I think it's about showing Gatland the form that means you can cut it at the highest level. And And that's why, you know, I don't think it's too much level towards club form. What's your thoughts on this, Murph? I noticed your dinner's just arrived on a tray. What are you tucking into?
Steak and veg, like an athlete.
Classic cyclist meal, that one, Murph.
Yeah, that's right. No carbs. Yeah.
That's
fat adapted, as they say. Fat adapted. I was going to say, I posted this afternoon about the Lions squad selection being like a huge elongated slap in the face for Eddie Jones. I don't know if you saw that. Because it is overlooking loads of Eddie's stalwarts and favourites like Slade, Billy Vunipola,
Johnny
May, Sinclair, long list, and picking boys that he's either refused to pick, so Simmons, and boys that he's dropped this year has been brought in. So Elliot Daly, Johnny Hill, who was in and out again. So yeah, it felt like a kind of a subtle up yours. I thought too. It's obviously not. It's much more bigger than petty rivalries, but it can be read that way anyway. Which I don't use it.
I think it can be read that way because Eddie Jones has got his selections wrong, hasn't he? You know, the results and the performances kind of show that, and I think that's the, you know, that's it. That's exactly why it's. It's been a horrible season for Eddie Jones, and I think the fact that he's stuck with so many players who have been out of form is exactly what the doctor ordered. Really, is some of those form players to come in. Although I do have to say, you know, when we are talking about form, you know, the Elliot Daly one, I'd like to drill down on this a little bit more just before we go for a break, because I think that. I'm a big fan of his, and I think we've said on this before, he's a great player, but I think he's been dealt a rough deal by playing at 15 for England, right, because he just doesn't look comfortable there. I can see all the attributes he's got, you know, again, proven at Lions level, had a fantastic test series in 2017, has a massive boot, which will be hugely important at altitude, and also can play on the wings and in the centres as well, but my problem is the last time he faced South Africa in the World Cup final, he had a stinker under the high ball, and that's my big concern there, is why you would take a player like that. I don't know. I just can't see Daly fitting into the test side.
Most important thing is he's picked as a centre.
Is that it? Yeah.
He's not picked out of position for a start, and one of the reasons why he doesn't do the high ball very well is because he's not a fullback. I mean, I think he's a guy who's got so much, you know, pace and what have you, that he gets away with a lot of things. But I don't think he's a natural fullback. He's been picked on position for seasons by his... but he never plays... he does play there for Saracens on occasion, doesn't he? But he's been picked on position for seasons on end by his coach. And he's going to go there. And the closest he's going to get to fullback is wing.
Yeah.
He's going to be 13, 11 or 14. And I think we'll see the best of him, especially on the firm pitches. And if the Lions play the way the back row selection suggests, I think you'd potentially have a great tour.
Centres is a fascinating one, and we're going to get deep into that in a minute. But first, we're going to take this very very quick break so Murph can scoff down his steak and veg. Right, we're back. We're back after an extended break to watch Murph wolf down his steak, but also go on a rant about kits, which we will have to save for another time, because that was, to be honest, I think that might have been the best. That might have been the best 10 minutes of the podcast there, Murph. I wish we'd had the microphones on when that was going on.
No one was listening.
No one was listening, but there we go. Dan, you're keen to talk more about the centres and actually build on the Elliot Daly stuff, mate. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I am. The Elliot Daly selection really excites me because, like Murph said there, I I felt very sorry for him over the last few years that Eddie Jones has played him in the positions he's played in. And it's purely because he's such a talented player. And how many times have we seen this? The talented players, you know, tend to get moved around in different positions because they're so good, but it doesn't do any favours for them. And it's just great to see the Lions selectors have actually picked him in a position that he's not playing in, but the position that he should be playing in, wants to play in. And if you put him in around all the top players, that's going to be so exciting to see him in that 13, that outside channel. I think it's going to be, you know, I hope it happens, and I think it will be great. And, you know, if he's not there and he ends up going on the wing, then I think he can do an okay job there. But he's a centre for me every day of the week. And I think that it's easy to look at that selection and go, how on earth is he in there? But for that it's just, yeah, it's a really, really good move, that, I think. And yeah, just wanted to make that point, really.
Yeah, no, exactly what you're saying. I mean, I think there's a lot of merit in that selection, because, you know, you're not going to take Elliot Daly as someone who is just going to be there as a fringe squad player, you know, fill in a bit of midweek stuff. Because if you're going to do that, again, you take a player who was bang in form. You're taking him in a position where actually centres are completely up for grabs. You know, you've got four specialists, well, not even specialists, you've got three specialist centres in Aki, Harris and Henshaw, and then you've got Farrell and Daly who can fill in there. So it is one of those positions that's genuinely up for grabs. And I do think that's still important, even on this truncated tour. It's important that players who go have a realistic shot of making the test team if they string some good performances together. What do you reckon when it comes to centres, Murph?
It just goes back to my point, actually, that if you think of it, Daly's been picked as a centre, and the guy that Eddie Jones has been really persevering with, well, you know, you could argue quite rightly, but the guy's been really loyal to over the last few seasons is not on the tour. Henry Slade is not going. Elliot Daly is going. So it's just like another, have that, Ed. There's not too many examples like that, but, you know, there is the Johnny Hill inclusion and the Sam Simmons inclusion, and obviously the Sinclair being left out. But that is the worst one, because he's left out an English player and brought in an English player in his place, if you know what I mean. So, it takes the edge off the Josh Navidi situation, by the way.
We sort of touched on it, really, didn't we, with the Eddie Jones thing, how bizarre his selections have been, and that it could count against, you know, it could count against a number of players, but it's sort of, it has in some respects, but also it's worked the other way as well, isn't it? And it's a real kick to Eddie as well, isn't it? And it's a great move by the coaches, isn't it, to identify them and still think that they can do a job if they're played in different positions, because it's probably a harder call to make, isn't it, really?
Dan, this podcast is many things. It is a covert cycling podcast. I'm desperate to try and turn it into a horse racing podcast. It's a Josh Navidi fan club, but it is also sticking the boot into Eddie Jones every now and again, in particularly when it comes to selection, which again will probably be echoed throughout this show and probably throughout the whole tour. We're talking about centres. I don't think it's that. I think there will be a lot of people who perhaps, I don't know, I think there might be a lot of casual fans who will be thinking that's a surprise inclusion. I think there's a lot to like about it, because I thought he had an excellent Six Nations, and Scotland's defence was, you know, was enough for Tandy to get the gig as defence coach. And obviously, I'm sure that's played a part of it. That's played part, you know, the fact that his opinion would have, I imagine, been in Gatland's ear. But I also think that he's not a fussy player. There's not a lot about it, but it's a position that's wide open. He could well be one of those players who, you know, writes his name in Lions folklore by stringing together some really solid performances, getting into that test team, and making a name for himself. You know, think back to 2001 and Rob Henderson coming into the side. Rob Henderson had his best ever games as a professional rugby player playing in Lions test matches. And I know that's a different era and it's a long time ago, but there are lots of players where that's happened. You think about players like Tom Croft and Stephen Ferris and players like that, where, again, they turned up in South Africa 09 and they had, in my opinion, they had their best ever games in the red of the Lions than they did in international or club shirts. So I don't know, you know, that might, maybe this won't happen with Harris, maybe you'll get injured in the first bloody game, but all I'm saying is I think there is a lot to like about that selection.
Well, there's when it comes to Tottenham Hotspur centres, there's a couple of elephants in the room, isn't there? There's George North's absence and there's Manu Tuilagi's absence. If both of those are fit, Chris Harris and possibly Bundiaki, I don't know, don't even go on. It's hard to say what the pecking order was in Gatland's mind when George North pulled out. Was Bendiaki in his side the whole time, or did Bundy come in late? You know, if Tuilagi was fit, which player would get overlooked? It's hard to say, but they would both be, if fit, they would both be on the tour. And some of these guys who are selected would miss out. So I guess we never know when it comes to that. But you're right, loads of players have gone. Jeremy Guscott was uncapped on his first Lions tour. I just found out in recent weeks.
No way.
Yeah, I think 89, he hadn't been picked by England.
That can't be right, Murph.
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. I think so. We'll have to double check that, obviously. It could be just like some kind of lockdown fever dream I've had.
Lockdown fever dream, or you've been following some fake news on Twitter that dates
He was definitely unfancy. I mean, apart from anything else, he was too expansive for the English team. And, you know, so I think he was, and there's loads of players who get. Scott Gibbs, for example, wasn't trumpeted outside this country much at all, and he went on the tour and displaced the English captain from the test team, came back. Lots of players that are good, they go as like a outside pick, come back as established international or even world class players from a tour. So you're right, it could, some of these Chris Harris types in the squad who are kind of from left field could come back as heroes. So
which I think is the exciting thing about the Lions. And I know it's, you know, it's a little bit nostalgic to look back, but, you know, and again, Eric Miller's another one for you. Eric Miller in 97, you know, again, I don't remember too much about Eric Miller before or after that tour, but again, you
big number
that.
Eight.
Yeah, Leicester, and, you know, got around the park really well.
Yeah, I liked him.
Played in the test series. I can't remember if he's off the bench or not, but, you know, he's certainly a part of that tour. And obviously it's tempting to say that it's nostalgia, but that's what the Lions is all about. And this is why 2005 just did not work, because he famously split the camp into two. So people who are out there who knew they were just dirt trackers. And when you've got a squad of 45, 50 players, plus everyone else who's on there as well, it makes for an unhappy camp. And I genuinely think that everyone in this squad has a shot at playing the test. And I think there are players in who aren't in this squad who have a test at playing in the have a shot at playing in the test. I still wouldn't be surprised to see Josh Navidi play a test at this stage.
There's definitely going to be changes before this tour even leaves, because there's loads of rugby left to play. Not so much for our boys, but the boys still involved in European tournaments and obviously the Gallagher Premiership or whatever. So this squad is guaranteed at least one of them won't even get on the plane.
Yeah, exactly. And it happens. It happens every time.
Yeah.
I've deliberately steered clear of, or other than putting out a request for questions, I've deliberately steered clear of Twitter today, because I just thought, oh, this is going to descend into the usual parochial bickering. But strangely, it's almost like it's the most balanced in terms of nationality that I can ever remember.
I found it annoyingly positive in some way. the journalists pounce on something, you know, and I would get their teeth into Gatland over something, but nothing. All I caught was people saying congratulations to everyone involved and commiserations with those who missed out. It's like, well, come on, get on with it.
Do you think, is it a bit like, Murph, when you go into a pub and you suddenly realise it's a bit of a fancy pub, when you want there to be at least, you know, a few shady characters, a fruit machine in the corner, slightly sticky carpets, you know. I don't know. I mean, I'm done with rowing on Twitter. I was just, I genuinely think that, you know, I said it before, I thought whoever he names, and I didn't envisage this squad, I thought whoever he names, they'll all be good enough to go. And I still think that, like, I honestly think this might be one of the strongest squads to leave these shores. There's not that, even players like Conan, who wouldn't have been in my side, Johnny Hill wouldn't have been in mine. You know, we can go back and listen to our squad selections, but I think there is so much to like about the squad. If you feel that confident that you can leave Carl Sinclair out, and you know, I think I do find that one odd. But it's, if you're confident enough to leave him out, then it's not like he's called up John Hayes to come and prop. You know, it's like every one of those props has something about them, and I think that it's like that across the board. You know, all the players there. You know, yeah, maybe Aki's not the most exciting player to watch, but he's still a proven international player.
Yeah, but I mentioned him in relation to trying to cope with Damian Diallendi, because one of the selections we went through was fairly lightweight, you know. Mm. If George, especially if George is not there, and obviously, like I mentioned earlier, Manny Tuilagi. I agree with you, but there's a couple I would have, like I said, that there was a hill I was willing to die on, and that was Johnny Gray. And they've taken 6 second rounds, and he's still not one of them.
Yeah.
So what I've been watching, I don't know. I don't know if it's just a lack of hype, maybe, because he's gone for some lighthouses in Courtney Laws and Johnny Hill instead. So maybe that was it, just line out presence, you know.
Well, our squad was definitely lacking in lighthouses, wasn't it? And to be fair, yeah.
Courtney, none of them were fit or in form. So
exactly, Laws was one of those players we wrote off because we just thought he wasn't gonna be able to get enough rugby under his belt to do it. But
we did say though that it was quite. We did acknowledge that, didn't we? We said it was light on big boys in the second row.
I do like the thought of Dan being, you know, Lions head coach and delivering that in his post-match interview, saying, look, I did acknowledge before the game we might get stuffed up front, but
yeah.
But what about, right, let's quickly touch on this before we take another couple of listeners' questions, just while we're talking about, because I found the whole nationality thing really, really boring. Like, I don't know why the BBC split stuff into. Here's the 11 Englishmen that are playing here.
Well, in fairness, it's a hot topic in Scottish rugby because there's been barely any Scottish people on the tour for.
But that's a story. That's the story there, right? Is that actually Scotland have got more representatives on this? That is an angle. But whether or not 11 or 14 Englishmen go or not, I'm a bit done with that. Like, it's just,
oh, yeah.
You know, like, this is one of those rare opportunities where you get to cheer on players that you hate normally. You know, I hate most of it. Not, you know, I use hate in the rugby term, right? You know, it's, you know,
it's not strong enough, is it?
Well, you know what I mean, mate. I don't watch, you know, I know what you mean. I never watch Owen Farrell and think, God, you know, I really like him to play. When he's got that England shirt on, you know, you want to watch him take a big tackle or get turned over or whatever. But this is the opportunity where you get to like these players. So I do find that stuff a bit nauseating. But the Scotland one, like you said, Murph, that's the bit that I think is interesting, because as much as they have improved, they've not won anything, or they've not, you know, I think with the exception of Hogg and Russell, who are applying their trade elsewhere, you know, it's not like you could say, well, these players are featuring in semi-finals and finals of top European competition. So I do find it interesting, but I really like those Scottish players who've been selected.
I think with all those Scottish boys, though, all the 8, bar Finn Russell, that is hot and cold, they're out and out in form, aren't they? They've played really well. You know, Harris, a lot of chat about him. He's played really well, hasn't he? He's had some great games for club as well. Leads the defence there, and Tandy's obviously probably had a big influence on that. And you know they're going to be coming down the middle of the park pretty heavily in South Africa, don't you, on the dry park? So, and then all the other Scottish boys are really in form. So it is quite a big contingent from them. But you can't really have too many arguments with it, can you? Really.
Well, I am a little bit shocked with Rory Sutherland. We didn't even really touch on him when we were picking our side. We mentioned Ferguson and we mentioned Ollie Kebble, but Rory Sutherland didn't figure too much in our chat. And if you look at the selection of front row across the whole three positions, they're all scrummagers. He's left out the non-scrummager in Sinclair. Because I'm not saying he can't scrummage, but he's not high
level. Renowned for it.
He doesn't have loose heads quaking in their boots at scrum time, does he? You know, he's a ball carrying forward. So Sutherland's gone on his scrummaging. Wyn Jones has gone on his scrummaging. Ferguson's gone on his scrummaging. And they're all boys who possibly over the border in different countries weren't favourites to play. So there's a clear trend for scrummaging front row, massive, if possible, second row, and pace in the back row. That looks like a trend across the whole pack.
I would say though, there is a man who'd probably disagree with you on that front, and that's Adam Jones. If you've heard him speak about some of these guys scrummaging. Now, obviously, as he admits, he's got a vested interest in Carl Sinclair because he coaches him, and you know he's
anymore.
Sorry,
not anymore.
Well, no, but he has. You know, he's worked very, very closely with him. You know, and he knows. You know, he knows what he's capable of, and he still bigs him up to this day.
Mm.
And he was quite critical over Ferguson and said that, you know, when the pressure came on against France, that he did struggle in that regard. Now, again, scrummaging is one of those things that I know naff all about. Dan certainly knows nothing about it. Murph, you'll know more than both of us. But I mean, I think if you were looking down that route, you know, arguably Tom Francis would be in there if you were just looking at the strongest scrummages. I'm not saying he should be, but...
Well, he's gone Porter, hasn't he? He's gone... Obviously, Furlong's going to be the starting three, bar accidents. But both the backups, neither of them are, you know, particularly mobile, as far as props go. But they're solid tight heads who are going to anchor the scrum. Obviously, there's going to be difference of opinion over Ferguson and everything. But they look, if you look at the shape of all three of them, they look like old-fashioned threes. And Sinclair is very much a modern type of three. But as obviously Furlong's got the extra bits to his game as well. But, you know, I just think, especially when you look at Lucid, you've got Wyn Jones, Sutherland and Mako. Mako's the only one in that lineup of props who you wouldn't say is a specialist scrummager.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And obviously Porter covers both sides as well, which is a boon on tour, isn't it? Because it does give you that as an option. But yeah,
it's super strong, really strong scrummaging outfit, isn't it? It's interesting. Yeah, Murph picking up on that. It's all out power, isn't it? Really strong boys there.
You know, the only form you've got to go on with South Africa is the last World Cup.
Yeah.
And he demolished England at the scrum. You know, people say, oh, well, Sinclair went off with concussion in the first few minutes. But Dan Cole is a bigger scrummager than, I don't care what anyone says. I don't care what Adam Jones says either. Dan Cole is a bigger scrummager than Carl Sinclair. He came on and got hammered. And then both Luceds got hammered against South Africa in their last international game. So, you know, people to question any of these selections, it's clear what's in their mind. They've got to be able to cope with the South African scrum, even if you know the beast is retired now and various other people aren't there anymore. So you still, even if they were down to their fifth choice, Luke said, you still know what's coming against South Africa in this tour, and you know at scrum time. So they haven't shied away from the issue, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I would say that, you know, Adam Jones already doesn't like me, so I'm not going to disagree with him anymore. So I'm going to have to back him over you on that one, Murph.
I would back him over me as well.
Right, let's take another question from a listener. This one's from Gareth Davis. Is Simmons going to carry a tackle bag? The Premiership final clashing with the tour start. Will he be able to make a mark in time to start in the Test matches? Dan.
At the moment, I can't see him. You know, I can't see him starting. Then looking at the squad there, and yeah, the way in which he's got that run of games coming up before he gets there. So I I think he's got a fair bit of work to do, but he's someone that is so exciting and explosive that you certainly wouldn't rule him out, would you? I don't think you'd rule him out. You can't.
I don't think a single player, like I said before, I don't think a single player in that squad is going to carry tackle bags. You can't, you know, if you're upping it to 37, there's no one going to carry tackle bags. Will he have enough time to displace Toby? I mean, you're facing an uphill battle to dislodge Toby because the guy is sheer class. But as we said before, anything can happen. Toby could pick up a minor injury, he could pick up a major injury. You might suddenly decide, you know what, I want a back row with both of them in. You know, I want to roll the dice, or I want Sam Simmons on the bench. You know, it could be that he tears it up. I think he will have enough time to make an impression. The game he's going to miss, obviously, is the game in Scotland. Mm-hmm, but let's be honest, I think that's more of a curtain raiser than the fact that it's been played over here says that it's a curtain raiser rather than the tour games, I'd say. What do you reckon, Mev?
Well, look, they wouldn't pick him if they had no intention of him being able to compete for the test team. So he won't be the only one, will he? I mean, Stuart Hogg's going to be in that exercise. There's loads of players who are going to be in that situation. I don't really see...
Yeah, but Stuart Hogg, you know, I suppose the point is that Stuart Hogg has perhaps a lot less to prove when he's seen his international class, whereas Simmons has got a handful of caps and is up against Toby. So Stuart, you know, if Stuart Hogg only played one game before the tests and was named at 15, I don't think too many people would grumble. But
no, I see what you mean. But by that same token, you could argue Sam Simmons has had no opportunity to prove himself, and yet he still makes the cut.
Yeah,
he didn't get any chance to show what he can do in the Six Nations because Eddie didn't pick him, you know, and everything else, so limited caps and all that. But he still made the cut. So they got that hard and fast rule. They always go, whether it's true or not, I don't know. You make the tour and then your form on the tour makes the test team. Obviously, it's not entirely the case, but you know that. And so if that's the case, then he goes on the tour and he plays well. He's going to be at least in the 23, isn't he? So
yeah, Simmons' selection for me shows just how valued he is.
Hmm.
Like, you know, they obviously really, really highly regard him.
I know it's not a bolter in inverted commas, because everyone's been calling it for months. But it also kind of is. You know, it's a guy who, I don't know how many caps he's got for England. It's like two or three, isn't it? You know, it's not a lot.
I think he's had three caps.
And he wasn't even in the squad over for the Six Nations. And that, you know, I don't know. So I think this is...
I'll tell you what would be amazing. This is hypothetical, obviously. He goes on the tour. He's brilliant. He's first test, first choice, plays all three tests, comes back, autumn internationals, not in the England squad.
Yeah.
Eddie leaves 3 months later.
My favourite players are those players who have... Who have their finest hours on Lions tours and go quiet, particularly the Indies. You know, you think about Simon Shaw. Simon Shaw, again, is another one of those players. He's thought more as a Lions hero than he is an England hero, isn't he?
What a player.
Jeremy Davidson,
you know, those players. Although, to be fair, Davidson did play a lot for Ireland, didn't he? But they were crap.
But he never hit the heights again. He never played as well. Obviously, he wasn't surrounded by Martin Johnson and you know, Richard Hill. So it's different, but... Even so, he looked like a world beater in 97, and then he was okay after that.
But that's it, though, isn't it? Because they're a lot of the players are surrounded by, you know, just absolute quality all over. That you raise your game, and it allows you to play the out and out game that probably a lot of the internationals want to play, but they end up covering and, you know, picking up the.
Sure.
It sounds harsh to say the slack, but they, you know, they, you do end up doing a bit of a different role, don't you, or can do.
I don't think it's about slack. And I think this is where, you know, we've all got our favourites and we've all got the players we want to see play for the Lions, and that's great. But it is about building a side to win a test series. And a team to win a test series is not the best 15 players. The team to win win a series is the best team that has the skills across the board, the form across the board, the ability to beat South Africa. That's what it's all about. It's about building a side, not rewarding the best players in... you know, obviously some of them will be in there, but it is about what they can do as a team unit. And with that in mind, gents, to finish, and I'm throwing this at you because I know that you are good enough to deal with it, I would like both of you, and I'll do the same, to pick your starting 15s for the first test if it was played tomorrow from this squad. So, you know,
just in hell, I can't even got a pen and paper.
Can we do it all together?
All right, Dan, we'll do it all together.
The thing is, if it's all together, you're picking by committee and it could take all night and then we're overrunning.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, are we all going to be together? Yeah, but it's fun then.
No, let's do three.
Either way, it's easy.
What do you want to do? Should we toss a coin for it to see whether it's by committee?
I don't mind. Well, we could just go shout out the number one and then all of us pick a player.
All right, okay.
And there's no need to agree on it then, is there?
All right, fair enough. Let's start with you then, Murph. Number one.
So the options are Wyn Jones, Rory Sutherland, and
Mako Vinopola.
Oh, it's probably Mako. This is my selection.
This is your selection. Oh, in that case,
I go Wyn Jones.
I'm going Wyn Jones. Dan
Sutherland.
Oh, very interesting.
Now that he's in, I think yeah.
Okay, two. You didn't even pick him in your squad, did you?
I know. That's what I said. But now that he's in.
Brilliant. But most people couldn't pick him out of a bleeding lineup.
All right.
I'm pretty disappointed I didn't mention him, actually, because I have rated him. But
two. Murph.
Ken.
Kenneth.
All right, I'm going Ken as well.
Yeah, and you, Dan?
Yeah, Ken as well, yeah.
Okay, tight head, three.
Furlong.
Furlong.
Furlong, yeah.
Yeah. Four.
Four.
Captain.
Four.
AWJ.
Yeah.
Adam Wynn.
Ditto. Five.
I mean, it's Maro, but I could easily see it being Laws. Maro Itoje.
I'm going Maro Itoje.
Courtney Laws.
You're going Laws, are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it, Dan. Like it. Just keeping us on our toes here. I'm basically just copying. I'm like,
I'm getting excited. No?
I'm like the dull kid at school who's just copying Murph's homework here, aren't I?
What did you say, Murph?
Yeah, I'm going to go next. I'm going to go for six. Okay. Have I done that? I've no idea. I'd pick at six.
Navidi. No, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Murph. Sorry, Murph.
That was hurtful.
Oh dear.
And why have I just chosen that point in time to choose a six? I've got no idea who's going to play six. Murph, who's at six for you?
Probably Tom Curry.
Tom Curry, okay. Yeah, Dan, who's at six for you?
Curry, yes, Curry.
Do you know what? Of this side he's picked, I'm going Tyke Byrne at six.
Yeah, that wouldn't be beyond the realms of...
And I think he's in pole position at the moment, just given how many bloody second rows there are on the side.
It's also extra line-up presence.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was just going to say that, man. Point that. Okay, open side.
Hamish for me.
Tipperick. Oh, Jed, this is a big one for you.
Well, I'd go Curry at seven.
Oh, yeah, you got the option of Curry.
I've got the option of Curry at seven.
Nice.
Yeah, good point that, Murph. Yeah, like that. Right, and then, all right, Toby at eight. Everyone goes Toby at eight, right?
Yeah.
Although,
you know, there is actual competition there with Simmons and Conan on the tour. So it might not be as cast iron as we think, you know?
All right.
Yeah.
So to quickly recap, Murph's pack was Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, Tyke Furlong, Alan Wyn Jones, Maro Itoje, Tom Curry, Hamish Watson and Toby Faletau. Mine was basically the same, but with
Tyke Byrne.
Yeah, with Byrne, Curry and Faletau. And Dan's was Sutherland, Ken Owens, Furlong, Alan Wyn Jones, Courtney Laws, and then Curry, Tipperick and Faletau. These are great options, aren't they? They really are. Right, let's go into the backs. Nine.
The way he's reading these out again sounds like we're going to be held to him at some stage.
Yeah, it's going to be recalled.
I forget who I picked. All I remember, I'm literally, all I can think now is Josh Navidi is good. If I'm in a default position, that's all I know. If someone asks me, what do you believe in? I'm just like, Josh Navidi is great. That's it. That's all I know. I forget what I said last week. All I know is every prediction I've made this year has been bloody awful. I thought Alan Wynne-Jones was coming towards the end of his career. I thought Wayne Pivac was...
You weren't alone there.
I thought England were going to win the Grand Slam.
Yeah, you were alone there.
Well, exactly. Right, scrum half.
Murray
for me. Dan?
Gareth.
He's just been Tommy opposite here.
He is, isn't he?
No, it's because of the 10.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
I don't know. Bigger for me.
Bigger.
Bigger could play outside half with me providing the service. That's how good he is.
It's a shame because if Bigger's your 10, it's unlikely they're going to have to go, unless you pick Farrell at 12, I wouldn't, but if you pick Farrell at 12, then Finn Russell makes the bench. But if Farrell doesn't make the starting lineup, he's definitely going to be on the bench because of the amount of cover he provides at 10 and centre, which means Finn Russell gets, if that it goes that way, Finn Russell gets no involvement in the test matches.
Yeah.
Which is a shame for me. At one stage last autumn, I thought he was the test 10, out and out test 10.
I was thinking build the side around him.
Yeah, but form's gone the other way, and that happens. He can still go out there on those pitches and be amazing, and force his way into it. But at the moment, his problem now is he hasn't played a game for a while because he's actually suspended.
Unless you have, and we're getting to the bench now, but you have Finn Russell as your 10 cover on the bench, and you have Daly as 13, 14, 15, 11.
Well, if Farrell plays 12, then Finn Russell's definitely on the bench. But I personally wouldn't, on current form, I wouldn't have Farrell in my side. So that's why I just brought up Finn.
All right.
Well, this is going to get very interesting now. All right. In the sense,
you want to go centres? Go on, Dan. You're itching to go here.
Yeah, as you boys been talking there, I could have done with a couple more minutes, but I'm going to go with Henshaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too, Henshaw.
I'm going to go Daly.
I like it. I do like it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it.
Murph?
Bundiaki.
What?
Like that.
Pardon?
Bundiaki at 12 and 13.
Henshaw and Bundiaki. When they play for Ireland, they don't particularly decide. I think they go left and right a lot of the time. They don't really chop and change.
Bundiaki.
I could see that on the combo front again.
I'm sticking to my guns of Chris Harris is going to be the biggest hero in the history of Lions, and I'm going to go.
I'm glad we're all diverging now. That's good.
No, I'm going Henshaw and Harris.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. This is interesting.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that Aki. Not that Harris is necessarily an explosive centre, nor is Henshaw. But I'm sticking to my guns now. Right, wingers. These are the only three positions that I've known for months that what I would pick here.
Really?
So I'll go first. And this for me is nailed on. Not nailed on as in it's going to happen, but if I was picking the side, this would be it. Liam Williams, 11.
Yeah.
Stuart Hargett, fullback. Anthony Watson, 14.
Yeah, I mean, of those three, Stuart Hogg, I think, is probably the firmest choice across the back three, if you know what I mean. He's probably got it nailed down. And then it depends whether you want to find room for Liam because he's such a, I don't know what word I'd be looking for. I mean, he's obviously an actual fullback. But I'd be tempted to go for out-and-out finishers at wing.
Would you?
Yeah, so I'd like to see Rhys Ammitt. I can't. You know, when he gets out there and he's playing on firm, I know I say this all the time, he's playing on the firm pitches and things open up. Like, he's going to be in space a lot, And although, there's proper competition in Josh Adams and Anthony Watson, I think he would be on my one wing. So long as he takes to the environment well on the, at the start of the tour, he'd be in my test team. And then it's a straight shootout for me between Watson and Josh Adams on the other wing.
Interesting.
Stuart Hogg, I think, is...
We'll come back to you for your final selection. Dan, back three thoughts?
Yeah, this is not easy. Not easy for me. I'd go Hogg at 15. Anthony Watson on one wing. And
Lloyd Williams on the other.
Crossfield kick.
Yeah. And Josh Adams.
Really?
Tough calls. First test, I'm going to go with that.
I think the only reason I've been so sure of mine is I do think that the first test is going to be a kicking battle. It's at altitude. It's, you know, the ball is going to fly. You're going to have to, and we know what South Africa are like, right? They kick from 9, they kick from 10, they kick from 15. They chase hard on the wings. So I think you are going to need some absolute bomb disposers in that side.
In that case, if that is what's going to happen, you know, at Loftus or wherever it is, and it's just a kicking duel for not all the game, but large parts of the game, then your back three is the back three that you would go with because they're all 15, really. But I'm just going romantic, and I'm going to go Hogg, Louis Rees-Samit, and Watson, based on the fact we're just going to play them like the 1974 Lions.
Yeah, it's the first test is Joburg, actually. Two of the tests are in Joburg, which is
Well, that's still... That's
altitude, still, isn't it? Yeah.
And that's
all I'm thinking is you can't afford to... Yeah, as England found out in the World Cup final, you can't afford to have a bad day under the high ball. And I just think Liam Williams is still, you know, world-class under the high ball. Watson has has played enough at fullback and offers you a great threat going forward. And Hogg is magnificent under the high ball. Big is a great under the high ball, but also those kicking options. If you can pin South Africa back, as Hogg has the potential to do, then I think you could be onto a winner. But
have you ever been to Joburg?
I've never been to South Africa. Full stop. Have you? My aunt used to live there though.
I went to Joburg when I was first dating my wife, and on the way back, I didn't know this, no one told me, but Joburg, because of the altitude, is one of the longest commercial runways in the world, because it takes the plane so longer to get up to speed because the air is thinner. And I had been having a couple of nights socializing, shall I say, with the flight deck while we were there, if you know what I mean. And on the way back, it was all laughy jokey, and it was taking so long to taxi, I thought we were just driving home. It was just going on forever, and I said, "Hang on, there must be something. Must be something wrong with the flight deck. They're not pulling the lead. Not pulling what they call it, the tiller. They're not pulling the tiller back, and it's because they need to get up the extra speed because they're already at, I don't know, 8,000 feet, is it, or something? I don't know. So yeah, I wasn't back in those days. I wasn't a very comfortable flyer. So squeaky bum time that was for me.
I think we can add another thing to the list, which is a. An aviation podcast that we now have.
Well. Yeah.
I've got the headset for it. So there we go.
That's right. You look like you're working in the control tower.
You two would be the last two I'd want as pilots. Murph's on the brandy and coke, and Dan's in the back of an Uber somewhere about 45 minutes away from the airport.
Yeah.
Right. Have you settled on it? Have you settled on a back three here, Murph?
Yeah, I did. I just went the romantic route. I went Hogg, LRZ, Anthony Watson.
All right. Well, just to recap then.
Frighteningly quick, isn't it? God.
Just to recap, this is my back division.
And that's what the South Africa back three is going to be.
Oh, it is. And there's a lot to be said for sprinter's pace. And I think that's where, I don't know, that's where I'd love to see LRZ in my, you know, with on the bench for me, bringing him on 55 minutes. But again, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because you do need that cover. You do need that cover on the bench, and that's where, you know, someone like Daly becomes very interesting.
Well, if you look across the selections in the back three, there's loads of pace there. I mean, even if the outside the ones I've mentioned, Josh Adams is not exactly slow, is he?
No.
One of them, Van der Merwe, can shift. So probably the only one there who's not lightning is Liam Williams.
That's true. That is true.
The Johnny May's left out, and you know, I think. Probably the most telling sequence of events in the whole season was that kick ahead by Callum Sheedy, where fucking Al Azad just took off and Johnny May was just chewing dust in behind him. And that's why, you know, the young kids on the plane and the 30-year-old is staying home, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But look, I think what that exercise has demonstrated is there's loads and loads of excitement within there. I don't know. Overall, as you can say, I'm feeling pretty positive about this squad. Dan, are you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, really, really positive about it. Yeah.
Murph, I know I'm obviously in denial about Josh Navidi as and you're going through the grieving stage right now. But that's
the different stages of grief, yeah. I'm still on the first stage of grief, actually.
I'm in denial.
Not even 9 hours ago. Oh, yeah, it was 9 hours and 20 minutes ago. It was less than that because they dragged the announcement out so far, didn't they?
Oh, actually, can we finish on this?
I'm just loading the bullets. Off you go.
Right. Murph, get yourself another steak. Dan, get yourself another non-alcoholic beer. this really got under my skin today because I thought I was having said the whole time, I'm just going to be relieved when it's done. I'm not excited about the announcement. I was so excited today, I couldn't do any work. And then it got to 12 o'clock. I was like, right, stick Sky Sports News on and it's going to be like it was in previous years where you'll have, you have a load of conjecture, but then they'll have time dedicated to the Lions announcement because they're the host they'll be the UK broadcaster of it and they're going to plug it really hard. So boring was the coverage, the Lions official coverage on the YouTube channel, that these are things that Sky Sports News cut to ahead of talking about rugby. The Champions League final, which they have no rights for, there was coverage of who Gareth Southgate will name in his friend squad for the friendlies ahead of the Euros, which they have no rights for. Oh, well, no, they might have rights for that. I can't remember.
If it's a friendly, no one's got any interest in it.
Exactly. They had an interview with former Chelsea midfielder Eddie Newton, who is such a dated reference that Dan will remember Eddie Newton. You know, that's going back to the days when,
good player,
when Chelsea were crap. He wasn't even a good player. Like, why am I hearing from Eddie Newton instead of hearing about rugby? But I don't know. The whole thing for me was really, really odd. Because, and again, I had Sky Sports News on the telly and then was looking at the official YouTube channel on my phone, just so drawn out. I was like, guys, it's great that you've put it on YouTube and you're trying to attract younger audiences and stuff, but everyone thinks this is boring as shit. Imagine what younger audiences are thinking of this. This is your opportunity to market the game, because the Lions is something that people outside of the hardcore rugby audience really give a shit about. And it's so boring that Sky, who've paid for the rights, don't want to cover.
Yeah. Well, I felt sorry. Is it Lee McKenzie, the girl who...
Yeah, and she's a very good broadcaster.
I felt sorry for her talking to a bloody hologram. It's like a really shit episode of Crystal Maze. You're too young, but Nightmare.
I love Nightmare.
Just talking to a bloody special effect. I mean, bloody hell. Anyway, you know, in response to your question, I am excited. Even in Europe, when there's been massive travesties of selection in the past, you know, you can't help but be excited. I'd just be happier if Josh and Johnny Gray were in the squad. But you know, you can't have it all. Let's have a quick pat on the back before we go. We got the hookers right, and probably everyone in the country did. And we called all the emissions, all the shock emissions, which aren't shocks at all. So Sexto, Jonathan Davis, Johnny May, I called. I'm having that one. Who else did we call? Oh, Billy, Big Billy as well. So
yeah, we did call all the emissions.
Yeah. So let's, you know, big pat on the back. Got the hookers right. Everything else was useless. And we weren't far off. We probably could have seen Ali Price come in because Thomas just haven't had enough rugby. He haven't been in the spotlight enough, even, you know, when he plays for his club, which he hasn't done much.
If I'm honest, I didn't see Tommy Price come in at all. I thought he might, because it's third choice scrum off, I thought he might take a punt on either Thomas or Kieran Hardy. I didn't see...
Well, it was always, because it was the third slot, it was always a chance that he wasn't he was just gonna play it safe and go for the guy who's got the games under his belt, if you know what I mean. Because he could end up being thrust into the first team. I'll freely admit I was biased towards the Thomas Williams there.
While we're talking about biased, did anyone listen to the official Harlequins podcast? Oh, no, sorry. I mean Five Lives Rugby Union Weekly.
The Danny Kerr.
Jesus Christ. Danny Kerr and Marcus Smith at 9 and 10. It's like, come on, boys. Like, I'm not just saying this because he's a mate. It's like, you are. That's exactly why you're saying it, because he presents the fucking show. That's why you're saying it. Yeah. Like, you know, Kerr, as I said last week, Kerr's a brilliant 34. Player. He's 34, and he's never, ever started for England.
I thought he might have had the nod, as you know.
Yeah, you mentioned it, but I just took the view, his club form's going
I think well. He thought he might have the nod.
Because Harlequins have been going well under new management.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're suddenly a world beater. It just means the system. I tell you what makes him look good a lot is bloody Alex Dombrandt.
He's a wonderful player.
He's always got the option of Alex Dombrandt all the time. There's lots of nines who would like
great to player. Yeah. And can't get a look in. Well, obviously, those couple of years back, he couldn't get a look in, did he?
No, I mean, he's got to get in the international side first.
So, yeah, but that's...
Yeah, exactly.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
As Sam Simmons has proven, it's easier to get in the Lions side than it is to get in Eddie Jones' side. Yeah. Right, rant's over. Optimism level's high. And I think that will probably do us for this week. Thank you, boys. Appreciate that. Giving up your Thursday night. Dan Killick hasn't eaten for 48 hours, so he's got to go and have himself a hot panini.
I enjoyed that, though. I do feel a lot more relaxed. Yeah, back to work now. Feel a lot more relaxed, though, so thanks. Thank you.
Dan, money never sleeps. Killick is off to play the markets deep into the night.
Yeah, I'll change my tie, put a different one on and get back out there. I think.
Put his stripy braces on.
That's it. Full Gordon Gecko mode.
Murph, right, will you DM me where you got the glasses from, please?
You're welcome. I think they're London Retro.
They're lovely.
I bought them off the internet. They look weirder because it's gone dark.
They're very smart.
Anyway, we're flogging this horse now.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Right, let's call it a night then, shall we, fellas? Right, thank you to Murph. Thank you to Dan Killick. Thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some top quality coffee, you can do it at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Thanks for listening. We'll be back to chat rugby with you. We've got the Rainbow Cup to look forward to, haven't we, this weekend? So we'll be back on Monday when don't expect spirits to be this high. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.